What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 214 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. We are coming to you on a wonderful Thursday night. It has been a heck of a week for Destiny. Bungie Sandbox developers were actually on the Firing Range podcast. That was a fantastic thing. Ended up being almost a 3-hour long show. And then immediately following that, Stasis got nerfed actually today, earlier today. So it has been a big, big week for the Destiny Sandbox. A lot to talk about. But it's kind of going to be a weird episode. We've promised you guys the override weapons for about a month now. So we're actually going to keep our word. We're going to do the override weapons. And we'll talk about the stasis stuff, but it's kind of hard to figure out how much the stasis changes are going to have an effect when we've only basically been able to play for like 2 hours today. Kind of need probably a solid week before we can really dive into those changes, but we are going to go over them, at least talk about them for a little bit. And of course, we are not going to pretend like the Firing Range thing didn't happen. We'll chat about that as well. So I guess first we should get the introduction out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined tonight by Kit Kutcher. How are you doing this evening, Kit?
Well, I'll tell you what. I spent much of my afternoon listening to a 3-hour-long podcast, and I have no regrets. So pretty good, man. How about you?
I'm doing fantastic. I was talking to my other podcast co-host, a cool guy, last night, and I was saying like, man, this high is gonna carry me for a couple days. Like, just, you know, we were before the Firing Range podcast started, I was like, holy shit, I feel like it's Christmas Eve. Like, I'm a child on Christmas Eve. I have like this like ridiculous nervous energy, and I'm like ready. And we worked so hard on coming up with all the questions that we talked about. Obviously, I think it's obvious to anyone who follows and pays attention. Like, we had to get the questions pre-approved. We weren't allowed to just wing it. Although we did end up winging it a little bit during the show, and I think that came across some of the time, especially when we asked about Rift. DMG was not tremendously pleased with that, because we were pretty expressly forbidden to talk about maps and game modes and PvP. But we did have to get stuff pre-approved, so we worked really, really hard on coming up with that big list of questions for subclasses and weapons, so that we could ask, you know, we did not want to softball this. Like, we wanted to ask the pressing questions, like, why stasis? How did this happen? You know, like, what about weapon balance? What about shotguns? What about 120s? Like, we wanted to ask that stuff. We tried really, really hard to do it. And then 3 hours later, it was like waking up out of a dream, and it was done, and it was awesome, and I had so much fun. And I actually got to ask you, like, from an outside perspective of listening to it as a podcast, like, I wasn't sure how it came off when we were recording. I wasn't sure if it was like rambly or if it was like disjointed, but like, listening to it from a podcast perspective, was it actually a pretty decent show as well?
I think it was. I think for a lot of it, it was definitely something where you have to be pretty into Destiny 2. Because there was a lot of jargon. There were a lot of terms used where if you're not already fairly knowledgeable about the material, it was going to make no sense. But then again, it's also, you know, an interview with some of the, people who are designing the video games. So you should be pretty into it to be listening to it. I personally loved it. Because I'm, you know, as one of the hosts of the Massive Breakdown podcast, I'm pretty into all of that. And so I was familiar with the terms they were using. I know, you know, kind of from looking around the internet and watching comments and stuff, I think different sections hit differently for different listener groups. There were some people who were super into the like the subclass balance part of the discussion, for whom the numbers section at the end was just like, you know, kind of a lot of numbers, and vice versa. You know, there were people who were like, oh, okay, you know, yes, more cones, please. And I think there were a lot of people for whom the discussion on like aim assist, for example, was just like whoosh, right over their heads, a bunch of words that didn't mean anything. And that's, you know, like again, it's, I feel like it was sort of to be expected given who you were interviewing, and the types of questions you were going to be asking, and you know, like the crew on firing range is all people who take Destiny's mechanics very seriously. So anyone who wasn't prepared for that, I guess, maybe hasn't been paying attention. But I enjoyed it. It was a ton of fun. My only regret was that I did not spend enough time taking notes. I may have spent a little bit too much time playing MTG Arena in the background while I listened to it. Boy, I made some people wait for my turns, I'll tell you that. I felt a little bad about a few of those games, but it was good. It was good.
Yeah, we made a conscious decision. Because obviously, the people who've done this in the past was Crucible Radio. Crucible Radio did it a number of times. We're all very familiar. We know the Crucible Radio guys. Fantastic people. But they kind of kept it at like a higher, more conversational level. And that was one of the things that I always regretted about those interviews, is that like they would touch on something like range or like accuracy, and they wouldn't really push too deep into it. And what it did was it like opened up this room for interpretation where the community interpreted it certain ways, right? And like the biggest example of that is range. For the longest time, the community thought that range gave more aim assist, right? And like we knew from our testing that it didn't, but that was still a misconception that persisted on for a number of years because of one of those interviews where they just like kind of touched on it and then they moved on.
Right.
So we made the conscious decision when we were going over it. We were like, how high level do we want to keep this? Do we need to keep this 30,000 feet? We were talking to Chris, who's the weapons guy, and Chris was like, nah, man, like I'll give you numbers. Like if you want cones, like we'll talk cones. And we were like, perfect.
Like there was that moment where he's like, I've got the data sheet right here. And it was just like,
yeah. And we purposely gave him the stuff we were going to ask for so that he could like get the numbers and have the numbers and like have that stuff ready for the show.
As somebody who was listening to it, not knowing what to expect, it was just like, oh my God, do not stop asking questions.
Yeah. It was fantastic. Chris is a really, really talented weapons designer. Obviously, you heard the stuff that he's worked on, right? Like Killing Wind was the first thing he built. He built Hawkman, like so it, DMT. Like he's done some really fantastic stuff. He really knows what he's doing. So it was great to talk to him. It was fantastic to talk to Kevin, because Kevin is just like, when you talk about people who like love Destiny and like play Destiny, like Kevin and Chris are those people.
Yeah.
Right. Like they live and breathe the sandbox. Like they are like you and me. They are like the firing range co-hosts. Like that is what those people are. So to be able to have them on, like honestly, if nobody had known that they were Destiny sandbox devs, like we could have had them on to just like have a podcast with two extra hosts to like talk about the sandbox. They're like those type of people. So it was a fantastically cool show. I mean, we learned some great, great stuff. Like we got some clarifications on things that had been, you know, bones that I was trying to pick for like a long time, right? Like to hear Chris say that hand cannons are one of the most easy and forgiving weapons because their aim assist cone is freaking massive was like me like, yep, I know. To hear Chris say that mouse and keyboard has bullet, what they call bullet bin. So we're going to have to change our terminology now. So they refer to what we call bullet magnetism. They call bullet bend, or they call auto aim, but bullet bend is the closest to what we do. So we're going to call it that from here on out.
Okay.
And then what we call reticle friction, they actually call magnetism.
Right.
So that's why there's a little bit of confusion.
Which I can see, it makes sense from their perspective. If you started from that term, like that's what a magnet does, right? It sticks,
right?
And so
we'll probably keep reticle friction for that one because I don't want to start using magnetism for something else, but I am going to try to use bullet bend for the other one. That way magnetism doesn't get confused between
right,
the two.
Right.
It was incredible to learn about the thought process that went in behind Stasis and like how they knew coming out like, oh, this is going to be hot, like we've tuned this up. But I understand where they were coming from of like, yeah, like, why would you freeze someone when you can one-shot someone?
Well, that was, you know, that was one of our questions when they first shared that freeze was going to be a mechanic, right? It's like, this is either going to be like, why would I do this when I can just kill them? or it's going to be too strong. And they, I think understandably, erred on the side of too strong because you don't want to launch a new subclass and have it be weak sauce out the gate.
Right.
That's a bad experience. But if it's super strong, well, everyone's going to use it anyway because it's the new hotness. And then you can patch it down as you see how it really compares in the wild. So I think their strategy makes sense. I think maybe a lot of people would have liked to see them move faster, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. It was very eye-opening to see that they go through these, because what we always get is we get, like, the end result.
Right.
Right. Like, we don't see the iteration. We don't see what happens in the black box. We just see either the release or the patch notes, and that's it. And so we don't see, oh, it actually started, like, super weak and really not fun. And, like, we kept bumping it up and bumping it up and bumping it up, and then we got to a point where we were like, oh, shit. But it was releasing, and we were like, we know we're going to have to nerf this. And so they did. And, like, this most recent nerf, which we'll talk about a little bit later once we're done with the housekeeping, like, this most recent nerf, I think, is probably the one that's, like, you know, that's taken Stasis out of being just wildly broken and OP and Crucible. But so we got to talk about all that stuff. Obviously, we got to talk about a ton of the weapons and everything, aim assist cones. There were some things that, like, I really wanted to clarify that Chris was like, honestly, I don't have time, because Chris has actually only been there for like 18 months. So a lot of the systems that were in place, like, he flat out told us, he was like, look, man, like, that system was put in place years before I came here. He's like, I don't know why the system works the way it does. I just know that it works this way, and, like, that's the sandbox we work in, right? So we were talking about stuff like flinch and shotguns having random pellet spread and what stability's effect on aim assist or accuracy is. And he was like, look, man, he's like, I can't really give you that stuff because all of those things were designed long before I came here, and we don't mess with that stuff. Like, we don't change that. It just works. So he's like, what I'll do is I'll look at that stuff and I'll figure it out. And if we ever do another one of these things, like, I'll answer those questions for you on that one.
Nice.
So I thought that was really cool of him as well.
Yeah, that's super cool. It was cool to hear an explanation of Zen Moment. I mean, they answered a ton of questions. So I really, really enjoyed that. It's definitely something that I'm going to have to try to get through a second time because there was just a lot. But
yeah. But I mean, he confirmed a bunch of stuff that we had thought too. Like, we had thought that there were relationships between zoom and aim assist cones. And, you know, one thing that I actually didn't know was I actually didn't know that the aim assist stat affected reticle friction on controller. I had surmised that perhaps it might, but I had never been able to test it in such a way as to, I could tell the difference, right? Which was pretty neat, but it's really fantastic that they confirm some stuff about just the different cones in general. And, like, the whole hypothesis we've had for a long time has been that there's two cones, an accuracy cone and aim assist cone, and they confirm that that is the case, right? And the aim assist cone grows larger depending on your aim assist stat, and your accuracy cone changes depending on range and zoom and accuracy and things like that. And there's two parts of accuracy and there's two parts of aim assist, and, like, all this stuff that we had hypothesized for a very long time, where we put together with, like, bits and pieces and snippets. Like, to have him flat out say it and to have us be able to be like, wait, did you mean this or did you mean this? And then have him clarify it. Like, it was very nearly a dream come true, especially because, like, I was given the opportunity to ask about that stuff when I was at Bungie. And they told me that if they told me that, I would never be allowed to speak about it. Right? Because we're only allowed to talk about stuff that they have publicly spoken about. And so them publicly speaking about all this stuff means that it's, like, it's out there. It's in the open. Anyone can talk about it. Like, we can ask questions. They don't have to be scared to illuminate more for us. Like, it's that type of thing. It's no longer this ridiculous black box that we don't know how any of it works.
Right. Yeah. It was, I mean, honestly, I think one of the best interviews we've ever had out of Bungie on any podcast, just because they were so frank. So
it's different. I mean, those two guys in particular weren't, like, scared of us as well, right? And, like, we tried to set expectations going in super early, like, hey, we, to the community, like, we want to talk about maps, we want to talk about game modes, we want to talk about trials, about anti-cheat, about rewards. Like, we cannot, these are not the people who work on that stuff. Like, Bungie is aware that we want to talk about those things. We specifically asked could we ask about that stuff? And it was, what it comes down to is it's just like, that's not what Kevin and Chris work on. Like, they are aware of it being worked on because they're at Bungie.
Right.
Like, that's, you know, it's a disservice to them. So I'm, you know, fingers crossed. Like, it seems like the reception was pretty positive. You know, I know our Discord was keeping like a live chat going, which I found to be, you know, tremendously supportive. And everybody there was really positive about it. I tried to get in, you know, the Zen Moment stuff was requested by the Discord to ask about that. Tunnel Vision heating up was requested by the Discord. So I tried to get in those perks. But it seems like the reception was just like overwhelmingly positive. And even Bungie seems like pretty happy about it. Like both Chris and Kevin were like, yeah, we should do this again. So like fingers crossed.
Nice.
Maybe we'll even be lucky enough and we'll get one of them on Massive Breakdowns. Cause that would be the one time when I'd be like, okay, it'd be fine to have a third person or a fourth person. Like I will do the editing for that, but I don't know. I gotta ping Dylan or something like that and see if that would ever be able to happen.
Yeah, that would be amazing, to get one of them on here. To talk about Times to Kill, to talk about ease of use of different archetypes, like to really dig into the weapons. I would love that, man. That would be amazing.
Fingers crossed, man. Maybe.
Yeah.
I just got to shoot the shot, right? I guess I just got to ask and see if we can make it happen. But worst they can do is say no, and we're in the same spot we are now.
Which is a pretty great spot, speaking of.
Still a pretty awesome spot. I mean, yeah.
We should really... wrap up this, I don't know if this is still an intro, whatever this is, we should wrap it up and get some housekeeping done.
I think you are right.
Because we've got some folks to thank, and we've got, I think a couple of reviews, and, we've got a ton of meaty topics ourselves to dig into in this episode. So unless is there any final impressions you want to leave from that opportunity to speak to those two?
I would say go listen to the Firing Range episode. Like, legitimately, it's almost 3 hours of just really, really, like, cool, in my opinion, sandbox talk. Subclasses, weapons, two great, great people from Bungie. We're happy to answer our questions. So go listen to it. Like, I'm personally going to listen to it again. Like, I want to... take notes. Like, I want to basically be able to like write a Massive Breakdown article based on everything that we learned, specifically about the weapons and stuff. Like, I want to be able to write about that. So I would just say, you know, for anyone else, like, if you like this podcast, you will like that episode specifically. So go do it.
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Fantastic episode, on what is another great, Destiny Sandbox podcast that I think fans of this show in general, would probably enjoy. So definitely it has a very different feel from this show, so it's very much its own thing, which is nice. It's good to have some variety in the Destiny podcasting community in terms of people actually talking about the sandbox and weapons, and it's something that has been, I guess, maybe lacking a little bit in terms of kind of more in-depth discussion prior to Firing Range. There wasn't that much other than us that I was aware of.
I mean, since Crucible Radio had been done, which has been a long time, since Crucible Radio had been done, it'd been pretty much, if you were PvP centric, it was us. And then Firing Range filled like a different niche, which was, normally Firing Range is a more high level thing than this. Like, we pick a topic and we like hammer down a topic. Firing Range is more like scattershot focus, more family friendly ish because it's on the DCP channel. But
Fallout's language was not family friendly, well, toward the end.
We made a decision that this episode was going to be like an episode. Like, it was going to be a no holds barred. We weren't going to high level this stuff. We weren't going to stop because Kevin was concerned. He was like, "Can I say fuck on this thing?" And we were like, well, normally we don't try it. And we were like, ah, fuck it. Yeah, say whatever you want. It so
definitely earned an R rating this time. There's no way you're getting PG-13 on that episode.
I think it was worth it. I think it was a good choice.
Yeah. Anyway, so like I said, let's leave it at that. It's a great episode on a great show. Check it out. And let's roll on into some housekeeping for Massive Breakdowns. We have some thank yous to say. As ever, massive shout out to our sponsors. And I'm going to do them in reverse order this time. Whoa, breaking it up here. A Solitary Bird, The Shazzle, Senso Cal. These Guardians hold a very special place in our hearts. They have shown incredible generosity to us here on the Massive Breakdown podcast. And their efforts essentially secure the costs and things of running this podcast, keeping all episodes available, you know, hopefully for as long as Destiny is a game and beyond. With their help and the help of all of our ongoing patrons, that is a dream that is in very good shape, and we really appreciate them. And we don't have to rely on sponsors or try to sell you weird powders in order to do it, which makes us feel good as well. So thank you so much to them. Thank you to all of our ongoing patrons, and special thank you to some new patrons joining us just in the last week. So first off, I want to welcome a returning patron. Now, unfortunately, I don't get a notification if someone pledges, and then maybe they take a break from Destiny, they take a break from the podcast, and they come back as a patron. It doesn't tell me when that happens. I don't know why, because I'd like to know. But if that happens, if you take a break and you decide to come back, hit me up, let me know, and we'd be happy to shout you out again, because we are always happy to welcome a patron back. And so a big welcome back to Bishwins, rejoining the Patreon. So happy to have you back. And then thank you as well. We've got three new patrons joining us. Panda, thank you so much for your pledge. Weston F, thank you. We very much appreciate your support. And I'm going to try to pronounce this correctly. Tygen KSU, we appreciate you, and please tell me if I mispronounced that. Definitely taking a shot in the dark on that one. Okay, well, that wraps it up for Patreon. I guess I don't know if I should say this or not, so maybe it'll get edited out, but we have 98 patrons.
I'm not going to edit that out, because I was going to say something about we're thinking about doing something special for 100 patrons, or for the people who are pledged when we hit 100 patrons, because obviously it's not going to be just, I mean, it probably won't be just 100, you know what I'm saying? Like it might be like 101 or something like that if we're lucky, but I'm thinking about maybe doing something special for everyone who's pledged. When it's not going to be huge, right? We're not going to fly you to the Bahamas for a little weekend get together, something like
we'd
that.
We'd like
Although
to.
I would love to do that. I'd love to do that.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. But no, we're just thinking about doing a little something. Maybe everybody gets a little knickknack, right? But something that's very exclusive to the people that were in that group of 100, like a special sticker with some special artwork, or I think we talked maybe about like a coffee mug or something for the higher level things. But I don't know. We're thinking about it. It is amazing to me that almost 100 of you guys have decided that you want to support the work we do on this podcast. It actually makes a huge difference. I know it probably doesn't seem like it does, you know, when you give just a couple bucks a month, but it actually makes a huge difference.
Truly it does. Just not only the, you know, the financial support, but it's, I feel like for me, there are like emotional and psychological benefits in terms of just, you know, seeing, you know, every month we take a look at our numbers. We see, you know, how many people are listening, what episodes they're listening to, how many people are pledging, when they became a patron, how many people are maybe dropping off, moving on. We take a look at these things, and, you know, it's not like the reason that we do the podcast, which is that we're passionate about Destiny 2. But seeing that doing the podcast is making that kind of a difference to that many people is, it's something. Like, it's not something I ever expected to come out of this. And I feel like I say that every couple of weeks, but it remains true every couple of weeks.
We've been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
6 years. 6 years. Well, you know, regardless, we do it for ourselves and we do it for you guys, and we do it because it's fun and we do it because we enjoy it. But, you know, I'd be lying if I were to say that it didn't make me feel good to see that so many people think that what we do is important enough to support us. So,
yeah,
you know, not to get sappy, but we do really appreciate you guys and everything. Yeah, we also, you know, there's another group of people we appreciate too. It's the people who leave us podcast reviews, because that actually helps tremendously.
It's true.
In particular on Apple Podcasts, but we don't really mind where you leave us a review. You can leave us a review anywhere. We actually had someone leave us a review on Patreon this week, which is pretty fantastic. So we're going to read those out. The first review is, do you like cones? We like cones, from JFish, and then 1988 and some numbers. Which everybody's always surprised when I read out their Apple podcast name, because it is never the name. It seems like everybody signed up for Apple or iTunes a long time ago under a different name, and that is never the name that they actually go by. But it says, awesome podcast. If you like to dig into the nitty gritty of D2 guns, Mercurius and Kit bring a unique perspective to the weapons and gameplay of Destiny PvP like no one else. I love the in-depth breakdowns and the general PvP focused discussion between two players who actually know their stuff. Only one piece of constructive criticism is you got to get a PvE expert on every once in a while, someone who does GMs, day one raids, really high in PvE content, and get their take on weapons and rolls. There's a whole other side of the game that is nearly as deep that gets overlooked, and I volunteer as tribute. Keep it up, and I look forward to every episode. Thank you very much, JFish. I really appreciate it. So I will say, you are not the first person to ask for a PvE expert to come join us. There are two very strong reasons why we don't do that. Number one is that despite the fact that we've done this for 214 episodes, I still edit every episode myself, and I'm a perfectionist, and I'm also horrible at audio editing. So those two things combined to mean it takes me a very long time to edit the episodes, and that's with just two audio tracks. So if I were to add a third audio track, it would take me an even longer time. And between this podcast, the Star Wars podcast, the fact that I now do monthly guest spots on DCP, and the fact that I do bi-weekly firing range, and the fact that I have a full-time job as an information security analyst, I have almost zero free time if you include also playing Destiny and having a fiance and a new house. I have like zero free time. So the idea of doing 50% more work to edit this podcast is not something that that appeals to me. So that, just being totally honest, probably isn't going to happen.
So it's definitely a big personal commitment. It's a commitment that I appreciate, because I did edit a few episodes while you were on break. I did some interviews many moons ago, and I did only one episode a month because, like, damn. Audio editing is no joke. It yeah, legit it really took sucks. Me like all week to get those episodes out. So it's definitely a commitment, but it's also, there are a bunch of bigger questions that kind of thing brings on, right? We've been doing this show, we just talked about, for 6 years. And it, you know, we did have a third host in the beginning who was there from the beginning and was kind of part of the original dynamic, and he moved on. And then it's just been the two of us for basically 5 years. And we've got, a pretty good rapport, and we have a very established dynamic in terms of how we execute the podcast, the way that we think about the game, the way that we think about playing it, and decision-making, and the way that we run the podcast, and those priorities. And to consider bringing in a new person, even just to talk about PvE, that's a big commitment, I think, for something that has sort of been like our baby for a long time, and considering the ways that a third party can change the dynamic, it can change things up, you know, it's not a small thing to consider. And so I think even if you had the time, you know, if we were supported fully by our patrons and you didn't have to work and you could just make Destiny content all day, even then, I would hesitate. Like, I would almost rather spin off a separate podcast to talk about PvE than bring in a third voice to sort of the main Massive Breakdowns podcast. Just because I think we've found a groove that works well, and people that listen by and large seem to agree in terms of people who tune in week after week. I know that there are those of you out there. There are the voices that we hear you. I feel like I work for Bungie or something now. We hear you. that would like more PvE content. And, you know, I think there's a niche in the community to be filled there. But I'm not sure that this is the place that it's going to happen.
No, I agree with you about potentially spinning something off. I mean, I've had a long-standing dream, and just I have no time, which is why we can't do it. But, like, I had this long-standing dream of turning Destiny Massive Breakdowns into, like, what Planet Destiny was back in the D1 days, right? Where it was, like, an umbrella under which many people wrote articles, many people did work, many people did shows, many people made... Like, I have had a vision of doing that for a long time, but I can't do shit for web design, and so a lot of that falls on... Kutch, and neither of us have the time to like spend building a website and like building out a brand, right? In the future, if this stuff opens up to a point where maybe we have enough support that I can cut back on some other stuff, or maybe my current job, like it's not as bad as my previous job was. I was a product manager before I did this job, and that was bad. I was working like 60-hour weeks. So now I'm just working like normal 40-hour weeks, and it's much, much better. So I do have slightly more time, but I've also basically taken on, you know, two additional podcasts that I'm now doing per month. And it turns out owning a house is actually a lot of work. So I've like traded some responsibilities for other responsibilities.
It is.
So, you know, here's what I will say to you is like, I don't think we're going to bring on someone for PvE. What I will say is Firing Range addresses PvE, specifically in-game PvE, significantly more than we do. So if you are looking to get that itch scratched, please do listen to Firing Range, because everybody there is a day one raider, grandmaster grinder, you know, besides me. I'm the only one who isn't, right? The second thing I will say is in our Discord, there are a lot of people who do the in-game PvE stuff, and they love nothing more than to tell me I'm wrong about a perk because it's good for in-game PvE. And I promise that I do listen to that, and I try to bring that knowledge into the podcast to the best of my ability when we're doing these breakdowns and saying like, oh, well, the dude who does solo Grandmaster Nightfall says that this perk is actually really good for PvE in-game stuff, right? And like, we do try to think about it. So that is what I will promise you guys. I will also promise you, if we do end up making Massive Breakdowns into like a larger brand type thing, like one of the first things we will try to do is we'll try to get a second podcast spun up that is PvE focused, but that is going to have to come at a time when Kutch and I have the ability to somehow actually do what we want to do with the with the Massive Breakdowns website. So if there's any web designers out there that want to help us do that, you know, you're welcome to reach out, and we'll try to get some done. But in the meantime, that website is pretty much just a placeholder, because we have these really super cool ideas. Like I did UI and UX design before I became a product manager, and like I have this really neat idea for like a flow of a website specifically that focuses on breakdowns and guides and things like that. And I like so very much want to see it implemented. But it just is a lot of work. So a lot of work, a lot of time.
Yeah.
And, we'll get there. We'll get there one day.
Yeah. I think it's definitely something that we've both had our eyes on. But it is a major commitment. And when it's not something that you do professionally, to the point where you maybe have the skills to throw together a professional looking website in a weekend, then it's, you know, not to, and I say that to compliment the skills of professional web developers, and not to do otherwise, because I know exactly how hard it is, because I'm a, you know, bit of an amateur web designer. I know enough to be dangerous, and to know how difficult it is to do well. And so it's, you know, it's something where I try to make sure we have a respectable presence. But going beyond that is a major time commitment for me. And it's also just something that I'm not great at. And one thing I don't want to do is reach beyond my abilities and end up with something that is like super mediocre, that sends a mediocre message about what we do, or that maybe keeps people from getting to the information that we say that they should be able to get to. Anyway, long story short, we want to do it. If we're going to do it, we want to do it right. And it, we're not right at this moment in a position to do that. But it's something that we'd like to be able to do. You know, let's all cross our fingers that stonks only go up. And if that's true, then I'll retire in a few years, and then we can talk.
Yeah, or that I'll just win the lottery because sold all my stocks and bought a house. So
there you go.
I mean, I guess the housing market could go up, but the problem with that is if I sell my house, I have nowhere to live. So
that's true. Yeah,
and not quite the same type of investment.
You don't want the housing market to go up until you're ready to sell, and then you want it to go up all the way.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, that was a very long conversation about a podcast review, but we do have one more podcast review. This is the one that was left to us on Patreon. It's from This Moment 23. Says, thank you all so much for what y'all do. For some context, I've been a longtime Destiny player, basically since day one, but up until recently, I didn't do much with it. It was mainly a way for me to keep in touch with friends from back home. After some major life changes this past year, I turned it into a passion. That's when I discovered y'all's show, which has fundamentally changed how I play the game. The information offered here, whether it's weapon rules or general sandbox commentary, is invaluable. It plays a key part in showing how much there is to enjoy about the game and what separates it from the crowd. To top it off, every week after a new episode, I can come back to my friends and clam mitts with fresh tips and tricks. I know I'm not the only one when I say I appreciate what y'all do so very much. Thanks again. P.S. Beneath Twin Suns is pretty rad too, and I love how much crossover fandom there is between the Star Wars and Destiny franchises. That is a fantastic review. Thank you very much, This Moment 23. It means the world to me that you would say that Beneath Twin Suns is rad, because I also think that is rad, and I have a ton of fun. And we are actually going to record Beneath Twin Suns tomorrow during the day, Friday during the day, so I can drink and enjoy myself during it. And I'm really excited about that too.
You know, I still probably have to do some work after we record that, but I might day drink a little bit. Yeah, I heard there was a survey that said people are drinking during work. So like, if everyone's doing it, you know, when in Rome.
I'm not quite that bold. I'm taking a very late lunch and then just like hoping that I have no calls that come in at like 5 p.m. on a Friday is basically what I'm hoping to do. You know, if I take my lunch at 4 p.m., you know, like by the time you're done, technically I have to work till 5:30, but it's like, does anybody want to call at 5:15 on a Friday for compliance shit? Not really. No one really wants to do with that stuff. So I hope I'll be free, but regardless, I'm going to have a couple glasses of whiskey. So,
you know, it's like people never went and had a beer during their lunch break when they worked in offices. I don't understand why people are even thinking, like, obviously, you know, now and then.
We had wet lunches were allowed, allowed at our company, the previous company I was at, and they got very early after I got there, they banned wet lunches. And it actually was not because of me, because I had only taken advantage of it once or twice. But yeah, wet lunches, it was some like old ass rule. I mean, we were a family owned company. We weren't like a public company or anything, but it was like a 2-drink rule at lunch that you could have. And like some of the executives like still had mini fridges and stuff in their office. Like it was like encroaching on the like, okay guys, this isn't like the 70s or 80s anymore. Like this is 2016. Like I'm kind of surprised you guys still have this stuff in your office and you still allow wet lunches. But I guess it was kind of just like an unspoken rule that they'd done it for so long. You know, like there were dudes at that company that had been there 40 years. So I was like, they were going to do whatever they wanted. And I guess they kind of just grandfathered it in.
That's how it goes sometimes. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not too concerned, that having a drink is going to impair my ability to do my job. Yeah, looking forward to Beneath Twin Suns. I just want to say, I think that is like the quintessential review of our podcast. Just kind of thinking about like the grand theme. Like if you read like every review ever written about us, so many of them mention that it kind of gives them the opportunity to be that guardian for their clan, where they're like, oh no, you don't want that role. You want this role. Here's why. Or, oh, hey, I saw you had some trouble in that PvP match. Here's maybe something you could try. Like, that just makes my heart happy. Because that is sort of like, I think that's kind of the position that the two of us maybe were in, just like within our own friend groups. At one point where we were like, yeah. So I made some notes on all the possible combinations for this gun, and actually it looks like these are maybe the best options. And then, you know, there were the eye rolls. But eventually nerds always become cool. And
they learned that we spoke the truth.
That's right.
They tried out a couple of the rolls we recommended, and they were like, oh, this is actually pretty good. Yeah, that is exactly why we started doing what we were doing. You know, I wasn't sharing with the clan because at that point I was a solo player, but I was sharing it with Reddit.
Yeah.
I would write these lists for myself where I would chart out the weapon stats and the perks that I wanted, and I just had them all written down. So I was like, oh, well, I might as well give these to other people. Like, they don't have to believe what I'm saying, but like, I'm doing this for myself, and like, I think I have pretty good reasonings behind this, so I'll just share them. So I did, and that's how we got to this point. Man, this has been a sentimental episode, and also we've spent 40 minutes and we haven't even gotten into,
I know,
the meat. This is gonna be a damn long episode.
It's a good thing that we're doing Beneath Twin Suns tomorrow and not tonight.
Oh yeah.
It is a bit of a sentimental episode, but yeah, same thing happened to me, right? Like, I had written up, I had a document where I had like all of the guns that I wanted and their stats, and I think their stats originally copied from there was the super old weapon stats spreadsheet that was much less well organized.
It was XX Trooper,
that's the one. Boy, I totally drew a blank back in the day. And so I grabbed a lot of their stats from that, and I made lists of all the perks that were, you know, worth having in my estimation. I was like, okay, now I know. Here are the combinations I want. And my friend was like, you should post this on Reddit. And I was like, well, I can't do it if it looks like this. And so I had to make it look nice.
Had to make it look pretty. People underestimate how important formatting is, really. Like, that was the difference between XX Trooper's spreadsheet and mine, was like, I was like, I think that a different formatting is needed. And obviously it has grown cluttered in its own old age as like more stuff has gone in there. But I still think, as far as spreadsheets go, it's pretty darn readable.
Yeah.
It's pretty darn readable. And I see that day in and day out, because like, I do a bunch of information security policy stuff. So I'm like literally writing policies and like procedures and plans like all fucking day. Right. And so much of that is frustrating to people because there's no like good formatting. And everything looks like shit. And it's amazing how easy it is when you just like come up with standardized formatting and you just like clean everything up, make it look easy. So
yeah, I wish everyone understood that. I helped to build an internal resource website for my team at the company I work for. And I had come up with a really clean, well-organized format for how the pages should look. And then the other two people proceeded to completely fucking ignore me and just do whatever they wanted. And I was just like, oh my God, this is why my pages are readable and yours are cluttered messes. And I proceeded to reorganize some of it before eventually just like throwing up my hands and saying, okay, I can't even. And so I maintain as much of it as I can, as neatly as I can. But boy, it really makes a difference when a page is well organized.
Oh no, it 100% does. It's a huge, huge difference. Like, formatting is one of the unsung heroes of the business world, of really of any world, IT specifically.
Yeah.
And when it's done badly, it can hurt stuff without you even noticing that it's hurting. But when it's done well, it's the same thing. You might not notice that it's helping, but it is noticeably easier to read a document. So that being said, we've now gone almost 45 minutes. Usually that means that this is probably going to be close to a 2-hour episode, because we still have to break down four weapons. We still have to talk about stasis. So my thing is that usually I would split this into two parts. However, we haven't talked about shit.
Yeah.
In this first part, it's basically been just housekeeping and a little bit of firing range. So do you want to just go balls to the wall? We can answer some listener questions now. When we finish answering the listener questions, I will make this part one. And then we'll talk about stasis, and then we'll talk about the override weapons, and I'll make that part two. And that way, like, we'll have an actual two-part episode. So they can book in, they heard about the firing range stuff, at the beginning of part one. They got listener questions at the end of part one. That's like, that's, you know, that's not a terrible, it's not a terrible episode.
Let's do it. Let's just go completely nuts here. I've heard some people have long commutes.
It's just more stuff to listen to. Does anyone really complain about more minutes of Massive Breakdown?
I don't think so.
Plus, I mean, we got to do something to top last month. Last month, we had our best ever listener numbers. So, I mean, you know, more episodes is better for us. So, all right. That being said, we do have four questions. Actually, Medic was the one who submitted. Medic is a patron of ours. He actually submitted a couple of them. He submits them just random various times throughout the week. And so we've accumulated all those. And then we also had Fatal submit a question. Fatal's another patron of ours. So the patron's taking advantage of their status and submitting a couple of questions. So we'll kind of rapid fire these out. Medic's first question is, are there too many one-hit kill energy weapons in the Crucible? So I'm assuming that he's asking, is the special weapon, like the breakdown of special weapons, is it skewed too heavily towards energy weapons and not enough kinetic weapons? In which case, I would say absolutely yes, but that's almost entirely because fusion rifles only exist in the energy slot, right? Like, I feel like we have pretty decent options for shotguns, for snipers. We don't really for fusion rifles. Like, you pretty much just have Bastion and that's it. So yes, I believe it is skewed too heavily towards energy weapons, pretty much just because of that.
Yeah. I mean, I think if that's the direction that we take the question from, then I would agree. Which is too bad, cause I actually I prefer to run an energy primary, when possible. So,
yeah. Now, there's a second way to take that question, which is just, are there too many one-hit kill weapons in Crucible? And he didn't necessarily mean to specify energy. He just meant, like, are there too many one-hit kill weapons in Crucible? In which case, no, I do not think that there are. I think that special weapons need to be one-hit kills. This is actually something we talked about on Firing Range last night. Chris Proctor said it, that his vision for special weapons is that they are a high lethality but limited uptime or potentially limited usage weapon, right? So what we would say is that is a kind of a low ease of use, high reward weapon, right? So it's either limited by range or it's limited by ammo or something along those lines, but the reward is that you get a one-hit kill. So shotguns will be one-hit kills, snipers will be one-hit kills, grenade launchers will be one-hit kills, fusion rifles will be one-hit kills. So the only ones that aren't that are exotics. Exotics don't necessarily have to be one-hit kills when they're special weapons.
Right. And so I think, I think that's exactly the answer that I would give, except that grenade launchers should never be one-hit kills.
We talked about this as well. I will say that base grenade launchers are not a problem. The only time we ever have problems with grenade launchers are when they are, like, specced out grenade launchers, right? Like, we had issues with Mountaintop because Mountaintop was unique. We have a little bit of issues with Salvager's Salvo, because it has a very specific role. And now we're having some issues with Ignition Code, which we're going to talk about later. But again, it's with, like, pretty much a specific role, right? Like, I very, very rarely find myself getting killed by just, like, a standard truth teller and being like, oh, screw that, dude, that was cheese. Like, most of the time, if someone's using just, like, a normal base grenade launcher, like, I'm not as upset about it as I am, like, the Mountaintops. Like, Mountaintop was cheesy and broken. And yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like if you were to strip all the perks out of grenade launchers, they would absolutely not be anywhere close to a problem. They're only a problem when you start slotting very specific perks in that just, like, entirely negate some of their downsides.
I think there's maybe arguments on both sides there. I think grenade launchers are in a phenomenal place right now in PvE. And I think they're okay right now in the Crucible as well, with the exception, like you said, of specific roles, specific perks that are available on certain ones. That said, I guess maybe my concern largely stems from the days of Mountaintop, when landing a one-hit kill with a grenade launcher was just sort of like a thing that happened pretty much every match. And it was dramatically unfun. And so I think it's just a really fine line. If they want to put cool perks on grenade launchers, then they just need to not be one-hit kill weapons unless you're at, like, very low resilience. And then that's your trade-off, right? You've got high mobility or high recovery, and you're just, you're vulnerable to grenade launchers. But I'm very skeptical of letting them be overly strong, because they have, I mean, I don't want to say they're not a low skill weapon, and certainly if you're ricocheting around corners, I think in more cases than not, there's some good aim going on there if you're actually hitting someone. But on the other hand, with practice, it's also not that hard to hit somebody or to catch someone unawares, maybe, you know, hopping over the top of a wall and dropping a grenade on them from 30 yards, or 30 meters, excuse me. Make sure I use the proper distance measurement for Destiny. Finally accepted the metric system in Destiny. It's not that hard to do if you spend a lot of time with them. So,
I would say that I am of the belief they can be a one-hit kill if they direct hit you. I think that the change that they made that allows them to still kill you with a one-hit, even if you're holding down the trigger, which before they wouldn't, before they would, you know, bounce off you if you were holding down the trigger. I think that that should be reverted. I think it needs to go back to, you know, you either have to release the trigger and let it be a direct impact, or you have to hold down the trigger and manually detonate it. I would never put Procstat on these. I would never put Ambitious Assassin. I would never put Slideshot. Like, those are things that entirely negate stated downsides of these weapons. I would decrease the burst damage, like the airburst damage, to be less. Like, I would still want it to be able to be used as like a primer, but not quite do as much damage as it does right now, where it's quite easy to clean someone up. But again, like I said, and this was one of the things that probably got the worst blowback weapons wise was that he said that grenade launchers are actually a relatively high skill weapon, and that didn't go over tremendously well.
I think that's largely a fair statement in terms of saying they're a relatively high skill to use well. They're not, you know, I said it's not that hard to do. It's also not that easy to do. It's not something you can just pick up the weapon and you'll go into a match and, like, it's your first time using it and you're going to be great at it.
Not with a random grenade launcher. With Mountaintop, yes, you could do that. Right? Like, with Mountaintop, you absolutely could literally just, like, pick it up and go into a match. You had a small rocket launcher in your hand. Like, it was really not that hard. But with, like, if you were to just grab, like, a truth teller.
Right.
Right? Or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about here. If you just take the grenade launcher that you have sitting in your vault, that isn't Mountaintop, and you just go into sixes, and you've never used a grenade launcher in PvP, you're probably going to have a bad time. Absolutely. What I am saying is that it's, what's the analogy I want to use here? It's like skiing, all right? The first time you get on skis, if no one tells you, like, what you're supposed to do, it's going to be a bad time. You're going to fall. But you spend a little time with it. You sort of learn some of the things to do and to not to do. And you can become competent in a fairly short period of time. You know, you're not going to be maybe great at it. You're not going to be competing. But you're going to be passable. You're going to be able to take advantage of it and use it effectively. And I feel like that's what grenade launchers are for me. There is a learning curve. And once you pass that learning curve, you can use them with a reasonable degree of effectiveness. And then you kind of really come into, I think, the true skill gap with them, where an exceptional player can do exceptionally dirty things, and everyone below that is maybe, you know, at a different degree of how frustrating they can be to play against. And so I think the average player using a grenade launcher who's maybe put that time in, probably not that frustrating to play against. Because to use a grenade launcher effectively at a certain level, there are some fairly predictable things you have to do. Once someone starts to get beyond that level, incredibly frustrating to play against. Because suddenly all the rules about how cover works, like, don't apply. So, yeah.
And they've got all that airborne ability, right? Which is usually reserved
in air accuracy.
Yeah, which is usually reserved for weapons that don't have long range or don't have, you know, or, you know, are harder to get optimal TTKs with. But with grenade launchers, it's just like, yeah, I've said this many times, but the worst experience I've ever had in Destiny 2 PvP was a meta that never got released.
Yeah.
It was a meta we tested at Bungie, and it was a meta where the energy grenade launchers were extraordinarily strong. Like, extraordinarily strong. And thankfully, they preemptively nerfed the shit out of it and prevented that from happening. But I remember being in those playtests and just being like, oh my god, this is awful. Like, this is horrible. Because grenade launchers, when they're good, are so oppressive. So, you know, I don't think anybody would be upset if you err on the side of cautions and you just, like, preemptively make grenade launchers a little bit worse, right?
Right.
Like, their usage rates are so low anyways. That you're not going to upset a huge portion of the population. I almost feel like people who use them would be like, maybe.
Like, so as long as they stay good in PvE, I don't think they're a weapon that needs to be anything more than a niche tool in PvP. You know, most of the people who are using them in PvP, that at least that I see, are primarily blinting with them. And so for anyone who doesn't know what that means, they're launching a grenade to prime you, and then they're immediately swapping to a longer range, very accurate primary, like a hand cannon. Yeah, like a 120 hand cannon.
We can just say it.
It's true. And they're shooting you in the face, and you're dying in a split second. Because you have no time to react, and the time to kill on any weapon that you'd be opposing them with is much lower than their swap time. So it's very similar to the Le Monarch Messenger hot swap strategy.
So for mine takes skill.
Right, obviously. Naturally, yes, yeah. Of course. Of course! No. It's not absolutely... Yeah. Very... That's actually a much, much easier way to blend. It takes far less skill, for being totally honest. The grenade launcher way is like, it's high reward, but it's also high punishing. If you somehow miss, you're like completely screwed.
Even my grenade launchers, it's hard to miss.
It is hard to miss. So let's move on. Second question from Medic FMF. We're never going to get through these. Should a linear fusion rifle do more body shot damage? I think we've answered this several times.
We have. It's that I think if they're in the heavy slot, they need to follow the sleeper simulant damage model. And if they're not, if they're going to be if they're going to do this amount of damage, then they need to be moved to the special slot.
Yeah.
And they've talked about why they're not going to do it. It's because it's very difficult to move weapons between slots like wholesale. And they're concerned that because of the ridiculous amount of aim assist that linear fusions have, if they were in the special slot, they would pretty much just end up being ridiculously oppressive. So they don't want to put them there right now.
Well, hopefully they'll just get like a very large damage buff at some point. If hand cannons magically disappeared, what weapon types would rise to the top in competitive PvP? Also from Medic.
In competitive, it's going to be sidearm sniper.
I think, actually, everyone would quit playing competitive PvP.
I would finally be happy.
And then it would be like Bastion and Le Monarch, because it would only be Merc.
It'd be a sidearm sniper.
Yeah.
Would be the thing that would, because that's the closest you can get to like the last word.
It would be Drain.
That's the closest you can get to that style of play.
Yeah.
For competitive PvP, you'd have a small amount of people that would potentially use like higher impact pulse rifles and stuff. Messenger.
Yeah, Messenger.
Desperado. You'd have a few people who'd use stuff like that. Bose would probably go up in usage a little bit. They would just pretty much swap over to the next thing that's closest to it.
All right, do you want to take this last one?
Yeah, it's without offering specific numbers, is the percentage of the Massive Breakdown Discord members who use mouse and keyboard versus controller known? It'd be interesting to have a ballpark idea of the split of people that lean into this side of the game between PC and console. That is not, I guess we could probably like set up a role and let people assign it to themselves. I know that in general, and this is something that we actually wanted them to ask this question, or we wanted them to answer this question on Firing Range, and DMG said no. But it is something that they mentioned in a community summit a while back. They didn't give us exact numbers, but they basically were just like, the split on PC is like 50-50 between, and this was in general. It wasn't just like Trials or Nightfalls, right? It was just like in general, right? What is being used? It was just like a 50-50 split, right? Which we then took to be, well, PC is about 30% of the population. It's a 50-50 split. That means mouse and keyboard users are about 15% of the population total, right? Is kind of how we came up to that number. But that has not been officially confirmed in anything. And like, I probably wouldn't even say that on like Firing Range or something because, you know, I don't know. I don't remember. These community summits were literally years ago. Like, I don't remember specifically whether that stuff has been like discussed openly at that point in time. But I feel like because it wasn't really exact numbers, they were just like, yeah, it's a pretty even split on PC. I feel like that's not something that's like hardcore secretive.
I mean, I'll say this. We certainly have a very large audience of Steam players who've marked their roles primarily as Steam.
For some reason, I thought you said Stadia. I sculpted that art. I was like, we have two. I think literally two people.
So I can't specifically tell which are mouse and keyboard primaries versus which are controller primaries. I would believe a fairly even split, probably not too unlikely. Unfortunately, I don't see any easily accessible stats from Discord that tell us which roles are the most popular. I can tell you that the Destiny Science channel has the third most readers, but by far the most messages.
There's a very active community in Destiny Science.
It's a good place. Lobby, unsurprisingly, has the most readers and the second most messages, but it's a 2,000 message difference on like the average. Like I don't know what the time scale is here. Over the last month, I guess. Yeah, Destiny Science, over 6,000 messages. Pretty good.
Cool. Well, we have somehow gone an hour without actually talking about any of what we wanted to talk about today. So I'm gonna call it a wrap for part one of the podcast. I guess technically we can just hop into part two right now. I don't think it really matters.